So I'm chatting with Bo right before we get ready to do this podcast, and we're still kind of getting ready to do this, and I said, let's have some fun with Raw Head. Now, I don't know if that's the best segue to go into this into this film, but if it involves Clive Barker, then it does involve some level of sexuality, as most of his written work does. And I just feel, Bo, if you will allow me, I just want this one quote I have to recite from Clive Barker himself. And it's a little lengthy, but I think it's quite apropos. He talks about this film that we are about to do tonight called Rawhead Rex from 1986. And it is, well, I can't say any better than the master himself, so let me just quote directly. Monster on the Rampage stories are about a phallic principle. Large males run around terrorizing women. Basically, I wrote a story about a 10-foot prick which goes on the rampage. I even put it in the title, Rawhead Rex. And there's a scene about two-thirds of the way through where the vicar has an image of a skinned prick in his head. I thought, what's going to destroy a 10-foot prick? This is getting into Woody Allen territory. So I made this guy absolutely scared of a vagina. It'll be bested by an image of rampant female sexuality, and it'll say, get me the out of here. Now, the gag only works if you understand the subtext. Otherwise, it's about this dumb monster running around. I couldn't get them to understand that the whole movie had the smell of sex. When this thing appeared, you had to think it was a penis. But they didn't get the joke. And it was a joke. And that was the point. Nobody's going to tell me that King Kong climbed the Empire State Building doesn't mean something sexual. I drew this big penis, and they said, it looks like a dark penis to us. And I said, you've got it. They thought more Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I knew I was in trouble. They got this German ski instructor who was 6'3" with bigger pectorals than Linda Evans, has tits overshadowed by his navel. They got it completely wrong. I winded them a little bit, and they said, get out of our face. And so, with that, I will intro our podcast concerning the Clive Barker penned opus, Rawhead Rex. And joining me this evening for this voyage is
This is Bo from Last Blog on the Left.
Bo, our frequent contributor, our good friend. I didn't pick up on any of this subtext when I first saw this film, and this is going to be all new turf to me. I guess that's kind of why I was anxious to see this again, because as I got older and started to understand what Barker's nuances were in his works, I started to appreciate them all the more. And Shelley Stillo and I did a podcast on Hellraiser a while back, and I've certainly since seen Hellraiser several times, and that was a little bit more overt with its sexuality. This had not a freaking clue, man. Not a clue.
Okay, sweetheart. Let's do it.
Ah, yes, it is the forbidden phallic fruit. And that's one. I kind of remembered hearing Clive Barker talk about it a little bit in an interview and discuss the genital nature of the character. But I didn't, as a kid, you don't put that together. You know, it's just not at the forefront of your brain because you're concentrated on the opposite genitalia.
The plot of this, Rawhead Rex, is essentially like this 8-foot-tall pre-Christian god who is released from this underground prison under this, I guess, cousin of Stonehenge in Ireland, where this farmer who's plowing his fields knocks it over, and then he unleashes this ancient demon who goes about terrorizing this small Irish village and essentially wreaking havoc and making googly eyes, whether that was the intention of the filmmaker or not, at all its local town folk.
Looking for a Reverend Coote. Am I saying that right? Coote?
That's right. But I'm not your man. I'm the Verger.
Oh, hi. I'm Howard Hollenbeck.
Declan O'Brien.
Tell me something. This cootie wouldn't happen to be old, would he?
sorry.
So he goes and terrorizes this a tiny Irish village and decides to take his toll on various dentally challenged Irishmen and women, as well as lots of pantry items in one particular kitchen.
Right. Apparently, he really dislikes dry goods.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of worth noting, too, that when he's initially unearthed by, you know, a drunken Irishman, and I dislike the film for perpetuating that stereotype of my grandparents would disagree after a couple of screwdrivers anyway
at 8 a.m.
But yeah, so what's actually trapping him is this large stone cylinder. Again, looks a bit phallic, and that's too.
The image is what I remember the most, and it was unfortunately the image from the movie poster, which differs greatly from the image that we see on screen. The movie poster itself is this threatening, almost King Kong versus Alien at a Guar concert. And I remember that ad in our local paper, and as a reader of The Damnation Game and Weave World, I knew that I had to see this film, even though I blinked and I missed it at a local theater. The title alone was intoxicating to me. The obvious
sure.
The obvious sexual overtones were completely lost on my young mind. I had no idea that that's what he was aiming for, but it was something that I had to see based on just seeing that monster alone. And unfortunately, in the film itself, it was not quite that threatening. In fact, I would say more along the lines, instead of King Kong, I would say more Grape Ape.
If Grape Ape and a wild boar had a baby.
A cross-eyed wild boar.
And also the outfit is very Renaissance fair.
It is. You would expect him to have a leg of pork in his hand or something.
Yeah, it's really disappointing once you see how little motion is really in the face. He's in, you know, the perpetual roar.
Yeah.
And when you get the close-up of the eyes, it's, like you said, it's sort of like a cross-eyed gorilla. Yeah.
They had those straight-on shots of his face, too, which were rather disappointing. In fact, I think he probably would have been much more effective had he been off in the shadows for the majority of this film. And, you know, we got some silhouettes of him, but they choose to have these close-ups so that they can show, hey, look, we spent $20 so that his lip will curl or whatever. And you'd see these very robotic movements in his face shot from about a foot away, and it screamed bad Muppet show.
There are parts of this movie that look like Mrs. Jensen's eighth grade class had done a hell of a play.
Right.
Some of this set design is really strange. Within the church, which figures heavily into it, and we should probably say something about that, there's this American writer with his wife and two children who are in this Irish hamlet investigating this church because it is the grounds of, you know, old pagan worship, and the writer is looking into the pre-Christian religions and so forth, which ties into Rawhead Rex as being this pagan god that existed prior to the Catholic Church.
How can I help? Well, when we spoke on the phone, I think I mentioned that the book that I'm writing is about the persistence of sacred sites in this part of the country.
I'm sorry, persistence?
Yeah. See, a lot of churches are built on sites that have been considered sacred for, well, some considerable time.
Pre-Christian, you mean?
Pre-Roman, even, although that doesn't apply here in Ireland. What I'm after are Neolithic sites, fertility cults, one sort or the other.
Here?
It's very possible, yeah.
Intriguing.
What I'd like to do is photograph the interior of your church, particularly those stained glass windows. Very interesting designs.
Of course, it's only open.
How about your parish records? Could I have a look at those?
I'm sure it can be arranged. I'll have Declan look out whatever stuff we've got.
And when you get into the church, the stained glass has this, not even a representation of Rawhead Rex. It was a photocopy in stained glass of this creature that had this Raiders of the Lost Ark laser shooting through it, whether the skies were cloudy or not.
And at first glance, when you first see that, it's effective.
Uh-huh.
You're like, wow, that's kind of what a neat little effect. On the 12th time they show it, not so much.
Right, especially when they show it initially. And as you said, it's very effective, and you see it strike the priest. And then the clouds roll in as Rawhead Rex is being released from his earthly prison. And it's still shining. And you're just wondering, what are there kids out there screwing with this guy with a flashlight?
Or it's like those... Remember in the late 90s when the laser pointers were all the rage? That's what I kept thinking right. of. And everyone would point it at the screen, and people would be like, oh, God, damn kids, damn teenagers. And
right.
Come here, Colin. I've got myself a laser pointer. Let's go screw with the vicar.
Yeah, kind of punk the vicar.
Great band name, by the way.
Right. Yeah, it's really a movie that is so overblown in all the wrong places. When you get to moments where Rawhead Rex is truly terrorizing the countryside, and by the way, I have to say, I agree with you about the title of this movie. I remember as a kid thinking, Rawhead Rex, ooh, that sounds scary.
Yeah.
And I'm sure when I told my mom, you know, hey, we're going to go to the video store and I'm going to rent Rawhead Rex, that her first reaction was, it ain't that kind of video store.
Exactly.
Holy God, my kid's into gay porn. What do I do now?
There was a film called The Contender that came out, I guess it was early 2000s, with Jeff Bridges, Joan Allen. And
yeah, great movie.
Yeah, fantastic film. And I remember recommending it to my father and saying, Dad, you got to go check out The Contender. And he said, okay, let me write this down. What was it called? Thick and Tender? I said, yeah. Go to the video store and ask for Thick and Tender and see what your mom think about it. See if you like it.
You're probably going to find yourself going through some beaded curtains.
The doors are going to creak on your way in.
And it's going to be one of those places where there's forever a mop leaning against the wall. But I was genuinely interested in the movie as a kid, and I probably saw it two or three times. I don't recall ever being blown away by it, although there were striking things about it. The baptism scene, if you want to get into that now.
Yeah, we'll talk about that because I think that's a segment unto itself.
So I remembered that, and I remembered that a kid had been killed in it.
Right.
And that was unbelievable to me as a child because you didn't see that in movies. Even in a film like Poltergeist where you have children terrorized for 120 minutes. There was never a death. You never saw a child really be in harm's way. Rawhead Rex really didn't pull a punch there. And I think there was a Clive Barker quote about that, about saying, you know, if you're going to do a monster movie, you really have to kind of go all out and you have to do it in a horrible kind of way so that it has a punch. There are moments in Rawhead Rex where there are intimations of a better film. And that's one of those scenes, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree.
He's been here before, this thing. Ian Rathmore, these people, they beat him. Look at this. It's a stained glass window in their church. You see? He's being done in by whatever it is the hooded figure's holding. Now, it looks like a tablet, but it's a missing piece of glass. That's the missing piece. See, I think there's other missing pieces, too. Is that the... It's like the handle of a knife or a sword or something. But it's a weapon.
Weapon?
Yeah. If I can find it and do that goddamn thing in.
One of the things that I noticed upon this viewing of it was that not only did they have an exact representation of Rawhead Rex inside this tranquil church setting, this, you know, horrid, horrid beast being assaulted in this stained glass window, but they also showed how to kill Rawhead.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't have opened up the Acme How to Kill Rawhead handbook and found more implicit directions than what was on the stained glass window, but yet it took the villagers an entire 90 minutes to really get to exactly what's going to take this hulking beast down.
And the villagers didn't even do that.
Yeah.
It was the American tourist who, thanks to his handy Polaroid, was able to, you know, plug the missing jigsaw piece of the stained glass in. It's incredibly inept. I mean, if this very day you Wikipedia, how do you kill Rawhead Rex? It's not even text. It's just that
right,
stained
just that
glass.
So
that's all you need to know.
All you need. One of the first victims was a man and his wife. He chases the man down and kills him in his little shed. Then goes into the house and proceeds to... It's almost like that scene that you see in film sometimes where someone gets really pissed off and they throw everything off their own desk.
Right.
And I always think to myself when I see a scene like that, I'm like, dude, you're going to have to pick that up later anyway. And they show this, you know, this monstrous Rex hand going across shelf after shelf in the cabinetry and clearing off all these various food products. And then there's this really awkward long shot of a box of uncooked spaghetti that's just kind of sitting there
right.
and falling to the floor. And I kept thinking, all right, is this phallic too? I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to get from this.
Did they have any visitors staying with them? I don't think so. I could check.
What amazes me is how the woman survived.
Clearly she hid herself. A wardrobe, perhaps? The attic?
I don't think Conroy knows what hit him.
They probably haven't had a murder around here before.
You're assuming Nicholson's dead.
State of the house? The blood? Yes, I think so. I think we're talking about some kind of revenge killing.
This film was directed by a guy by the name of George Pavlou, and he did a film called Transmutations, which is also known as Underworld, that was also based on a Barker short story from his Books of Blood series, which is a fantastic series. If anyone has a chance to hasn't read that yet, they are just they're fantastic and rank up there with anything Stephen King has done. But his Books of Blood series had one called Transmutations, and he did a film version of that too, which was just horrible. I'd seen that afterward, and you would think Clive Barker would have learned a lesson from that, but he entrusted this gentleman to do it again, and he said, I promise we'll get it right this time, we'll get it right. And again, the way Barker tells it, he was brushed aside and said, look, it's we'll take care of it, we'll do this. And the combination of this and the of Rawhead Rex and Transmutations experience culminated into Barker taking the reins himself of Hellraiser and directing that, which is probably, of his works, one of the most accomplished cinematic versions of his writing to date.
Yeah, I'd be hard-pressed to think of one that's better as a film. Even something like Nightbreed, which is certainly a little more polished than Hellraiser, just gets real silly. Except for David Cronenberg, who can do no wrong and never will, and I stand by that. It's interesting because the Books of Blood, there are things about that will stick with me forever. One is the story In the Hills, the Cities, which I still think is one of the best horror stories ever written. The line that introduced it, which is, everybody is a book of blood, wherever we're opened, we're read. I've always loved Clive Barker's sensibility about horror, even though I'm not convinced he's always very successful. But I think it's interesting because Rawhead Rex isn't a horrible screenplay. I was trying to kind of remove myself from the visual element of this film and listen to dialogue and pay attention to some of what Barker was trying to get across with the sexuality and so forth. And I think in the hands of a skillful director, I don't know that it ever would have been a great movie, but I certainly think it could have been a pretty good one.
That's what they called him. Rawhead!
You stay here.
No, Dexter, wait, Dexter, wait, think. It doesn't care about you. When it's finished with you, what will it do with you?
Kill me. I hope.
Declan, for the love of God.
Upstairs, fuckface. I can't keep God waiting.
You know, it kind of supersedes that Christ imagery. I mean, here's this creature returning from the dead, only he's not here to bring peace and love. He's here to basically just wreak hell and maybe spawn. I think there's some implications that maybe it's a bit of a sexual thing as well, not just because of the name and the phallic imagery. I think that's three. I think that there's some interesting stuff about the character of Rawhead Rex. Unfortunately, in this movie, all you have is this bad monster that kind of awkwardly runs around. And the weirdest thing is seeing him haul ass. When he really starts running, it just looks strange and not scary. It just looks weird because you can tell it's a guy in a suit and he probably doesn't see where he's going.
The mouth hole is only so big for his face to right. peek out of. And he's got no peripheral vision whatsoever.
And I've got a question to pose to you concerning him going into the house where you see the overly symbolic spaghetti spilling from the table. When he goes to the wife upstairs, and there's the moment where Rawhead Rex realizes that she's pregnant and then doesn't harm her, and then there's, you know, kind of a lingering gaze between the two. I think they fall in love.
I noticed that sexual tension myself.
And then Rawhead Rex kind of leaves. I guess he decides, I don't know nothing about killing no babies, and takes off. And then the wife is left, and when she is discovered, she is almost feral.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's part and parcel of his swirly hypno eyes that he gives the police detective.
You know, I didn't even think about that until you mentioned it, and I don't know if it was just the trauma, maybe it was the poor acting.
she was hot, horrified by her own performance.
It just scared the bejesus out of her. All I seem to get out of this time and time again, after obviously doing more research on this, was that it was this female sexuality was superior to anything, and it was kind of this mixture of emotions that she had between, you know, that she was able to somehow defeat this hulking beast, and she was a poor actress. Because, again, going back to the stained glass window, I'm not giving away any spoilers by saying that the way to take Rawhead Rex down is by holding up what's essentially a lawn gnome with a very large vagina.
I think Rawhead Rex as a character in this film is much like a 15-year-old treasurer of a chess club, that in his element, very effective, when presented with a vagina, very frightened.
The two things that I want to make mention of it upon this second viewing. One was the left field nudity that was kind of thrown in to achieve some sexuality aside from, they're like, okay, a ceramic vagina can't be the only nudity that we have in here. You know, I don't want it to be just a lawn ornament with a rather large naughty bit. I want it to be, I have to have a budget for a little bit more, so hire me an Irish girl who will take her top off. And there's one scene where this girl gets pulled from her trailer, because I guess they couldn't afford to film in actual homes. He wreaks havoc on a trailer park, and I didn't even know there were Irish trailer parks. I thought that was solely a U.S. Invention, but apparently there was. There's an Irish trailer park where a young boy and girl are heavily groping on a couch, and again, she's supposed to be babysitting, so it is very, very U.S. in origin. And she is pulled outside by Rawhead, and her ever helpful boyfriend is trying to pull her back in, and in the midst, he only manages to pull her dress off, which comes off rather easily and allows her heaving bosoms to bounce and flail about.
Listen, I'm sorry. Hey, you're not upset, are you?
I'm not. I'm just feeling chilly, that's all.
Oh, you poor little baby. I'll keep you warm.
And
are you getting warmer?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah, it's one of the best uses of breakaway clothing outside of a strip club that you're going to see in film.
Exactly.
A lot of this film really is set in that trailer park. And as an American Southern male, I've talked to lawyers I'm not sure how far the litigation is going to go, but they think we have a case.
I can see that.
I thought that was strange. You have this impression that in Ireland, of all places, everyone's living in these cozy little stone cottages. And where does your life have to go as an Irish person that leads you to a trailer park outside this sleepy little town? And thus, Rawhead Rex not only becomes an analogy for the 15-year-old chess club treasurer, but also the American tornado.
Or the annual mobile home regatta that takes place in the Midwest every year when the flood rains come. Let's get to the scene that we've been hyping pretty much throughout this entire podcast, and that is right. The urinal baptism, maybe. I'm not quite sure. The golden shower, the scene that this is probably most notable for, where this vicar was kind of a shady character from when we first meet him, and he's giving his sermon to his congregation in the beginning of the film, where we see that piercing red laser, and is very kind of wary of, what was his name, Howard Hollenbeck, I think, was the American who came snooping around. And at a moment's notice, he turns from this devout Catholic priest to this Satan-worshipping devotee who quickly recognizes Rawhead as his brand new god and wants to receive Rawhead's communion and proceeds to get whizzed on by this beast in the middle of a graveyard.
Yeah, on his knees, no less. It's a mind-blowingly weird scene.
Wants to baptize you.
You know, and there's part of me that sort of respects the...
Go ahead, say in your face. Say in your face. The in-your-face aspect of the scene. You wanted to say that.
You know, I'm just not that quick. I wish I had thought of that. Like I said, I'm Southern. You have to give us a minute. It's strange from the point of view that here's a film that had no lead up to this moment. You have the, you know, sort of spiritual successor to Hal Holbrook from The Fog wandering around talking about how he's got a new god and everything. And we've all been there. I mean, we've all worshipped a pagan god at one point or another. I went to college. The actual baptism scene, he relishes it at a point that I don't think you can see outside of a German porn. You know, I mean, he really bathes himself in it. And there's a scene moments later where he's talking to the actual head of the church, the actual priest. And the priest is obviously shocked and horrified by the goings on. And if memory serves, again, I might just be making this up because I wanted the movie to go in this direction. But it seems like when he grabs the priest, there's a conversation about the fact that the urine is now on him. Or at the very least, if that's not the case, I know for a fact he says he wants to give you the same baptism. Not only is Rawhead Rex afraid of vaginas, but enjoys giving golden showers to priests. I think it's interesting that if you start to break down the character of this monster, he is quite the fetishist.
Well, look at his outfit, which is like black spandex and leather.
By the way, the showered upon priest is then very happily eaten by Rawhead Rex at one point, because apparently all the followers of Rawhead Rex enjoy sacrificing themselves for him.
Which is not really the best way to build your congregation. I mean, Scientology at least got that part right. You may be involved with space aliens, but there's a way to be saved. I mean, you can get those thetans out of you. It doesn't all have to end poorly.
Or maybe just good Reiki.
Did you hear that?
No.
After viewing this a second time, I can tell you where I stand, as if you couldn't guess throughout this entire conversation. It certainly did not hold up on really any level, except, as you had mentioned earlier, the writing in it. I could certainly appreciate aspects to it, but it was an enjoyable lark that probably would have been best suited if I had seen it on Mystery Science Theater 3000.
It really is a movie that does beg mockery. It was a lot of fun, actually, to go back and watch it again on that level, because I had forgotten sort of how bad it was. I went into it thinking, this is probably a mediocre film, and it either exceeded or underwhelmed those expectations, one depending on your perspective. But by the end of it, when his head pops back up at the end after he's been reburied and kind of mummified a little bit, and I just thought, oh my goodness, what I wouldn't give for a sequel to this movie that had been made like a year later.
Well, hey, Bo, thank you for accompanying me on my revisit to Rawhead Rex. I appreciate you taking this one for the team.
Yeah, and now that I've seen the film as an adult, it turns out I'm turned on by a couple of things I got to talk to my therapist about.
You may have to make your appointment after mine, because I'm the one who suggested this film, so maybe we'll just high-five each other on the way out.
It'll be group therapy for Rawhead Rex.
All right, Bo. Hey, thank you. Everyone check out Last Blog on the Left at FrightFlix.com.
It's frightflix.blogspot.com.
Go check out Bo's musings for the month of October, Rocktober, should I say, where he has dedicated every single day to a blog post on there. So go check it out. Bo, thank you for coming out and getting pissed upon by a film called Rawhead Rex.
My pleasure. And if I can conclude with one thought, it would just be phallus, 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 phallus.
There goes that bell ringing, and the angel gets their wings. And I will close by saying, better to be pissed off than pissed on. Have a good night, Bo.
You too, sir.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. We should start praying to pagan gods more often.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
And I've looked into several. I'm kind of going with Pan or Bacchus.
Bacchus. Perfect idea. I was thinking Loki more myself.
That's also a good choice. Norse is something that I haven't explored enough.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I have all his albums.